Welcome to the Publish Her podcast, a place where you can come to get inspiration, motivation, help, encouragement, and support in your journey to write, publish, and sell your book. Hosted by Alexa Bigwarf. Cause I've been where you've been, and I felt what you're feeling, and I don't want to get in your way. All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Publish Her podcast. Today, I think, is going to be a great episode for everybody who is struggling with productivity, with being more efficient and getting all of your work done in lifestyle design and building a structure around your work that allows you to still have a life that you enjoy and have time to enjoy, which is always something we're always looking for. So today we have Stacy Ennis, who is a best-selling author, coach, and speaker on a mission to help leaders clarify their ideas and harness their unique story to make an impact. Along with being a founder of Nonfiction Book School, an accelerated author program, her background includes ghostwriting for a Nobel Prize winner in medicine and leading as executive editor of Sam's Club's Healthy Living Made Simple, a publication that reached around 11 million readers. Wow. Her best-selling book, co-written with Ron Price, is Growing Influence, a story of how to lead with character, expertise, and impact. She's also the host of Beyond Better, a podcast that explores how to create a business and life you love, which I've been a guest on, and I love this podcast, so you definitely want to subscribe to the Beyond Better podcast. So thank you, Stacy, for joining us today.
Thanks, Alexa. I've been so looking forward to this conversation.
It's what we're talking about today, I think, is something that no matter what genre you're writing in, what you're doing, whether you're doing freelance work or any of the things with writing, I think it's really important because as writers, we can easily get consumed by all the things that go with writing and publishing and all of that. Your story is so intriguing to me because, well, I have envy of your situation. We'll talk about it later in the podcast, but she moved her family to Thailand and then to Portugal and truly embodies this digital nomad, I guess, if you will, kind of life, you know, creating the life you want and where you want it and having all of that around it. So I personally am looking forward to benefiting from all of this, but let's start out with the very, very basic question of time and productivity, because I know one of the common complaints that I hear from people in our community is, how in the world am I supposed to write my book when I'm also supposed to be marketing it and growing an email list and getting out and doing in-person events and going on podcasts and running ads and doing all of the things? So how do we... You talk about a time blocking and energy management that can help you four times your productivity and free up more time for rest. So one, how did you come up with this system? And then we can dig into how it works.
Well, I would say coming up with the system was a lot of trial and error, but also learning from neuroscientific principles of flow and productivity. The biggest tenet of the work that I teach the authors that I get the honor of guiding on their book writing journeys is around creating repeatable, consistent time for deep work and really being hyper protective of that time, calendaring it out, understanding the rhythm of the week that your ideal week, the ideal day that you want to have. Building up a vision and a plan for your time based on what we know about how our brains work. And a lot of that too, I think has to do with not just some of those principles around energy and flow, energy not from a woo sense, more from a like physicality and brain power sense, but also willpower, because mm-hmm. research shows that our willpower declines as the day goes on. So a lot of people say I'm most productive at night, but then when I really dig into that and I ask them about their actual productivity at night, I find out that they're actually not typically following through very well in those evening hours because willpower has declined. And so mm-hmm. usually when I'm working with authors or people that want to create content or create thought leadership, because thought leadership requires thought and intentionality and introspection. I am encouraging them to build in that space at the front of their day. And then if you still feel energy in the evening, go for it, create some more. But having that consistency and that discipline of showing up regularly in that window of time, you also form new neural pathways that teach your brain to start expecting that access of flow. So I think that's super important. The other piece that we could certainly talk about in relation to all of this is outsourcing, because I think we don't talk about that enough. I think that early on in my own journey, I remember sitting in a, it was actually a women's leadership conference. It was in person. Gosh, this was probably 8, 9 years ago. It's a long time ago. And yeah, it must have been because my daughter was very young at the time. She's 11 now. So it must have been like 9, 10 years ago, actually. And I remember listening to this woman, speaking to our group, and she was talking about like, get a house cleaner. Here's some things that you should hire. And I remember sitting there and going, well, that's easy for you to say. I don't have money to hire that. And now I look back on that and I wish that I understood what actually outsourcing could do for my life. So there's that piece of it too, which is a little different than what you asked, but I feel it's such an important topic, especially for women.
No, I think that's a great topic because, well, you did a workshop for us last year, and you talked about this calendar management and all of those types of things, and this the concept that you just described of keeping those hours really, really tight to that. But when you talk about those things, the house needing clean, the kids needing to go to school and back from school, my daughter's in volleyball and soccer, so there's not a day of the week that we're not either going to pick her up from practice or going to a game or going to a tournament or all of those types of things. It gets very difficult to protect the time and to say, okay, I have it in my calendar that Fridays from, 11 to 3, I'm going to be writing, but then all the other stuff of life happens. And now all of a sudden, because I didn't have time Monday through Thursday, I have to do other things that I wanted to do in that. How do you get to the point where you're actually able to protect that time and do those things so that you stick to that writing time?
I think a lot of times it starts with lowering the bar of what success means. I think
Ooh.
we build it so high in our heads of, to write this book, I need to have 1 to 2 hours set aside 4 days a week. Yes, that's great. That's ideal. And that is what I get my clients and students to eventually. But starting from 0 to an hour of time a day is a really high bar to set for oneself. So, and I had somebody write me on my email list a while back who had this dilemma. They were, it was a man. He was saying, I really want this, but I'm really struggling to follow through on this commitment to myself. And I wrote him back and I said, okay, try this. Just go for 10 minutes. Just see if you can hit 10 minutes. And he wrote me a couple weeks later and he's like, okay, I did it. He'd written like a couple chapters of his book at that point. And I think
Wow.
sometimes it's that getting started of accessing the thing that you want to do and making that like having not having cognitive dissonance around this goal, these behaviors you want to have, and what you're actually doing in your life. It builds that self-trust. And then sometimes you find that, okay, I set aside 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and I'm just that's all that's my bar of success today. If I get 10 minutes to sit down and write 3 sentences down, I've worked on my book and I'm good with that, and I'm going to consider this a success. Interestingly, people usually find that it extends well beyond that, and somehow their day still works. It's still everything ends up still happening. I think part of that is because when we feed ourselves through these activities that nurture our creativity, nurture our focus. This is such a big piece that we, and I do this too. I have to check in with myself all the time because I go through these periods where I am not harnessing my focus in a way that is serving me. I'm checking my email too much, or I'm looking at social media too often, or I'm not reading a book at the moment, like some not at this moment, but I have those periods where I fall out as well. And so that's the other piece, is when you are really nurturing focus in your life, everything else in your life improves because you are nurturing that focus and you're able to get more done. You're able to get more done, not to then go get more other things done. You're able to get more done so that you can have more life. I mean, that's what's the point of all this if we're not making space to live.
Exactly. And that's where I find myself often stuck, is that I tend to be one of those people that just keeps adding things to my calendar and adding things so that any of the time that I have protected for doing my writing or my own book marketing often gets thrown out. And I think you're right, going back, it's a prioritization thing, but sometimes it's hard to put it as a priority when you're working or you have the family obligations and things that have to be done. And for me, that's been one of the biggest struggles, is how to make that, because in the beginning, we're often not making money from our writing or making, you know, it's a long process from the time we start that book until the time it becomes part of our revenue streams or all of those. So I find myself constantly stuck in this hamster wheel of the hustle culture, of constantly hustling to, like, okay, I've got to bring, you know, I've got to create this program. I've got to do this so that I have the money coming in so that I can write my book, except for I get so busy in the hustle that the book writing never happens. And I know you mentioned that the hustle culture is so dangerous to our health. So I am dying to get your insight on how to balance that out, how to get out of it, how to stop running in the hamster wheel.
You know, I think it is a really hard mindset to break out of. And again, in full transparency, that is my natural angle. Like I naturally am like driven, go, 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 go. And it's a continuous journey for me to really be mindful of rest, of connection with myself, with my family. For me, one of the things that has really served me personally is actually leaving the environment that was supporting that hustle culture. I live now in a little beach town that's very relaxed, and it's like the exact opposite of who I am in so many ways, but it's really supported that really, really well for me. But then I think the other pieces that I think are kind of like force us to slow down is also building in all that stuff that we know we need to be doing: getting sleep, exercising every day, eating whole good foods, which requires a slower life. If you are truly making space to nourish your body fully, that is going to require more of your time and energy, and it's going to require you to slow down and be more present. So I think all of those, you know, and I know we, before we started, you know, we chatted, I don't remember if it was actually today or in the previous conversation, about just mindful, like being mindful, being present, being connected. For me, when I get out of sync, it's because I have stopped doing my morning meditations. It's because I've let go of some of my practices that I have every single morning that help me anchor also into, money. I do every morning a money check-in, and also some of those kind of mindset practices that help me stay really anchored to what my actual priorities are. And then again, like looping back around to outsourcing, I think sometimes we get into that hustle mindset because we think that we're the best at everything, which, you know, which is just not true. And actually, when we bring in other people to support, for example, with marketing, rather than me killing myself trying to do everything, I've learned to do the things that I'm excellent at and to get support with the other things, like the production, like the distribution, like the data measurement, and digesting that so that I can make informed decisions. Some of those pieces that are, on a practical sense, like help me actually let go, and because somebody else is doing a better job at it because they have the focus on it.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it comes down to budget too. There's so many authors who are like, Oh, I can learn how to do that. I don't have the money to pay somebody else to do it right now, so I can learn how to do that. And I know because I was in that position. So then what happened, instead of me paying somebody a couple hundred dollars to format a book, I taught myself how to format a book and spent like 60 to 70 hours. Like, it just wasted time. And when you think to yourself, I like your money check-in too, because I think if you come back and you say to yourself, okay, if I spend 60 hours, which if you're trying to learn how to format a book in InDesign, you will in the beginning. Learning this instead of paying somebody else $200 to do it or whatever the price may be, how much am I losing by being so, committed or stubborn, if you will, on doing that myself so that I don't have to outsource it. So I do think that the outsourcing piece, sometimes we have to get out of our own way and just say, this is an investment in my business. This is an investment in my process. And it's in the long run going to save me so much time, which will make me more money because I can write the book in that time and I can do those things. So yeah.
I think those are such valid and valuable points. I hope anybody listening to this is, that's kind of in that space where they're trying to make decisions on where to spend their money. Because I know that too. I mentioned earlier that story where I was like, okay, lady, you don't know my life.
Right.
That was my response. But I think once you start to see that when you step into your area of excellence, that really enables all the things to happen. And that drives more money, right? Because
Right.
I'm so much better off using my time to meet with a potential client or do an interview or create content for my own platform than I am editing the video and posting it on Instagram. That doesn't
Right.
make sense, right?
Right.
But until we talked about money, until you really understand your numbers and what your time actually means and where your value is best spent. It's hard to also make those decisions because then you're just looking at what things cost rather than what
Right.
the return is.
Yes, that is such a great point. And I don't know, because when I started, I had zero budget. So I also can appreciate the people that are there. And in that situation, sometimes you do have to bootstrap the things yourself and take the time to do them until you can get to a place. But I tell you what, when I was finally able to bring on an admin assistant just to help me with some of the stuff that was taking a lot of my time, and you can find an admin assistant at a very reasonable prices. It's amazing what someone like that can do in 3 to 5 hours a week that saves you so many. It's not just those 3 to 5 hours generally. It's more than that, I found. It can have such a big impact on your productivity and what you're able to get done. It also allows you, which one of your big things is having the time to rest. And I love that you have that in your and the things that you need to do for your body and taking care of yourself. Because as creatives, as writers, as entrepreneurs, as wherever you fall in there is a direct connection between your mental fatigue, emotional fatigue, even physical fatigue, and how well you can create creatively.
Yes, it's so true. I mean, there's also all the physiology there of like, you're reducing your stress and all of that. And I think when I think about rest, to me, rest takes a lot of different forms. So rest can look like relaxing and reading a book. I'm a mom of two kids, so that's not really my reality most days. But actually my greatest rest every week is that my husband and I trade off weekend days, and we each get a big, huge chunk in the morning to go on a big exercise of whatever we're doing that week. So I go on a
Nice.
long run with a friend. It recharges my social battery. Usually we will go to a yoga class after, do yoga at the beach or something like that, a stretch. And he goes on a big cycle, like a big ride on his bike. And so getting also just my space away from my family, as much as I dearly love them. Just to be Stacy and not mom is so big. And that is restful, even though I am sweating. Like that's my rest. So
Yeah.
I think just
Yeah.
like whatever recharges you can be considered rest.
I agree 100%. And it ironically, a lot of times it is rest is physical activity. I mean, for me, going on a long walk, it recharges me far more than sitting on my couch and, you know, quote unquote, resting. It's a completely different thing for your mindset and for your body. I really want to get into talking about how you got to Portugal. But before that, before we get into that, you have some tips for productivity, for email, social, all those types of things. Will you share those? And then let's talk about how you built this incredible lifestyle and how we can too.
Yeah, I think I'll share a few of the key things that I've seen that make a really big difference for myself and for my clients. Number one is setting time limits on when you're on screens, and particularly first thing in the morning. I know I'm repeating things people hear, but I think sometimes we need reminders that we are responsible for our own attention, and that discipline of attention is, it's within our control, right? And the number of, I don't remember the stats off the top of my head, but it's a massive number of people wake up and grab their phone first thing in the morning, and they check messages, check email, like often even before you get out of bed. So a simple thing you can do is put your phone on airplane mode so that you don't have those notifications when you wake up in the morning. They're not like bombarding you. And then, you know, this also depends, some of this will depend on your work schedule and what's reasonable for the work that you're doing. So if you have a 9-to-5 and you do have to be on email first thing in the morning, obviously adjust as needed. But in my own personal work, my email check time is 11 a.m. or even 12 sometimes. So I protect between 7:30, 8 o'clock to about 11:30, 12 o'clock, kind of depends. Lately, I've been getting up earlier because I have a big project that I'm working on. So it's more like 7 is when I'm at my desk. But that period that is really your protected time. And, you know, we all have different schedules. So this might mean getting up earlier, going to bed earlier, which is what I've had to do lately, even though I am a night owl. But really setting whatever that meter is that you can set for yourself, that you're like, I will not check anything that steals my attention until this time, and really honor that. And then I will not check anything that steals my attention after this time. So that could be 9 p.m. It could be earlier, later, depending on your sleep schedule. It's really important to know that the moment you start checking whatever it is, you open what I call the trap door to the brain. So when you wake up, you have an opportunity to be focused. You have a choice to be focused. But the moment you start checking, I'm just going to check this real quick, I'm just going to check and see if I got that email, you open this little side door to your brain. It's very, very, very hard to close that again. It's not impossible, but it's very hard to close it. And so what we're looking to do is limit, or I guess extend the amount of time that door is shut so that you can really be super, super focused in the morning. On that same note, this is for entrepreneurs, people that have control over their schedule. And certainly if you have some influence over your meeting schedule, you can bring this to your boss, but no meeting days, at least one a week, is, I think, really critical, that we have a full day of clear calendar where we really have a catch up. For me, that's Friday. It's a really good day because I can clear for the weekend and I can go into the weekend with, you know, an open, like I've done the things I need to do. So that's very important. But also, if you can move all of your meetings to after lunch, that is massive and huge and so great. It really makes a huge, huge difference. Now, when I tell people that, they're like, well, how's that going to work? I mean, like, how am I going to fit everybody in? Yeah, people will have to wait. And actually, I think, especially if you're a business owner listening to this, that is not a bad thing for people to see that you are busy and that you protect your time. When I take new clients in, one of the things that I tell them is that I am very protective of my time, which means that you are not going to get an immediate response to an email. This is what my schedule is. And, you know, and I do it in a respectful way because I'm there to serve them. Right. But, that people appreciate that. They appreciate that you are caring about them actually through this, you know, this protection of your time. So those are some of the things I would say. Also around email, if you can set some set times So for me, it's roughly 2 times a day is when I'll check and reply to emails. And it's around that 11, between 11 and 12, depending on my focus that day. And then it's again at the end of the workday, toward the end, not right at the end because I'm so tired and ready to get off, but around 4 p.m. for me.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. All right. So let's talk about lifestyle and having a life that you love and how you built your location independent business, because I don't know if that's of interest to everybody who's listening to this podcast, but I know that it's certainly of interest to me, and I'm moving in that direction. My partner lives an hour and a half away from me. So when I'm able to, I work from his house, you know, things of that nature. But man, I sure would like to get to the point where it's like, I don't know, working from the beach or working from Portugal or wherever. So how did you do that? How did you end up? I mean, you were a high school language arts teacher and you built a six-figure entrepreneur business and you went to Thailand and you went to Portugal. And I just, how did it happen? How do I make it happen? Well, I can't make it happen for a while because my ex-husband would never allow me to take my 3 children across the ocean. But, you know, in 7 years when they've all flown the coop, we've got goals.
I think it's, if it is 7 years out, like this is a great place to start building that vision, right? And that's what you're already working on. I think location independence can mean different things to different people. So to me, it means that I can live and work anywhere. And mm-hmm. And for us, that's Portugal at this time. We've been here for 4.5 years.
Wow.
For somebody else, it maybe they don't have aspirations to live abroad, but they also don't want to be kind of beholden to their location. They want the choice to, you know, I have some friends that live in Montana and they go to Arizona for a couple months a year. They have a little place mm-hmm. there. You know, that is location independence, right? They can mm-hmm. move for a couple months, they can come back. And it can be really defined by whatever you want. Another example would be moving out to the country and mm-hmm. being able to work remote. That's location independence to me as well, because you are not, your livelihood is not tied to your location, right? You can
right.
live and work where you want. For us, you know, our journey started right out of college. When I was a teacher, I taught in the Dominican Republic and then we taught in Vietnam after that.
Oh, wow.
And then I went to graduate school at the University of Cincinnati, the most exotic of all the locations. Then we had kids and we had this dream of moving to Thailand. It was because when we lived in Vietnam, we visited Thailand. We had a magical time, as one does when they visit Thailand. But it really felt like such a far off and difficult dream to accomplish. I remember going on a walk with my husband when I was pregnant with our first child, my daughter who's 11 now. And, we were really like, this is going to happen for our family. We will move abroad. We were really anchored in it, but it felt like one of those things that you say, but you don't necessarily believe is going to happen. And then we had our daughter, we had our son. Our son ended up having quite a lot of medical challenges, still does. And that dream just felt kind of further and further away. I think one day, I don't remember what the situation was, but one of us looked at the other one and said, I am so tired of talking about this moving abroad thing. Like, let's just pick a date. So we set a date 18 months out in the future because that felt like reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we invited my family over and we did like a picture of Thailand on the television and we announced that we were moving to Thailand. It was like, we had no plans. We had nothing set, but it was like, we're doing this. This is our date. And then we just did all the things that you do to organize. You know, I had an Asana project for our move. I hired support with immigration stuff. But I think backing up, I knew that's what we wanted. So I was really intentional in building a brand that was not tied to my city and mm-hmm. actually really actively, as much as I have had at the time, a really good professional network in Idaho, where I'm from in Boise. I did not try to get clients in Boise. I only ever met people in a relationship capacity and I never really tried to win business because I was like, if I start building my clients locally, it's going to be so hard mm-hmm. to move. And so I've just always maintained this mindset of a global business. Well, it was more of a national mindset. And then having moved, then it kind of became a different mindset in growing. But yeah, and then we eventually moved to Thailand, and that was kind of a disaster, which I can share more about if you want. And then we were kind of in that disaster. We looked around the world and we thought, where could we go that will work better for us? And that's how we ended up here in Southern Portugal.
Wow. And you've been there 4.5 years. I'm really curious about some of the things that have nothing to do with writing and publishing, but the whole like immigration, how you live there, how you run a business from there. I mean, we probably don't have time to get all of that answered, but you mentioned you hired professionals. So there's a way to get to legally immigrate, and you just, tell me about it.
I'll tell you about
like,
it. So
I'm taking notes.
But I'll talk a little bit, like I'm going to just talk a little high level tax structure briefly, but I promise not to go down that route too long, but I think it's important to understand the business side of it. So my business is an S corp. I'm taxed as an S corp, which means that I hire myself as an employee of my business. I'm the sole, I have a whole team, but they're contractors, and I'm the sole actual employee of the business, which means that my business is located in the United States, but I, as an employee, am living outside of the country. So we still file taxes in Idaho, pay taxes in Idaho, stuff like that. We came to Portugal on what's called a non-habitual resident visa. Things have changed a bit since we came, but it's still available in some capacity. I think the version we have is a little better than the version that's available now. And it was a little easier to get back then than it is now. But this is one thing I highly recommend that I did not know existed when we moved to Thailand. You can hire a relocation company with a relocation attorney to do all the stuff for you. And that was a total game changer for us. Uh-huh. Thailand was a complete nightmare. Complete nightmare. We had to leave every 3 months. And we always had this risk we might not be able to come back in the country. And we were doing everything legally, but they still made you leave every 3 months. So we went to Singapore, Vietnam, my husband went to Malaysia, like we had to make these little trips. But Portugal was not nearly as difficult for a lot of reasons. But the other nice thing that I think is pretty cool is we have an amazing tax structure here. I mean, I'm paying not anywhere even in the realm of taxes that I was paying when I lived in the US. And that has been really nice, paired with pretty low cost of living and medical care being way, way cheaper.
That's a big one.
It's so big. Alexa, I have to tell you this quick story. I was at an ear, nose, and throat appointment for my children. Okay, so specialist, right? Mm-hmm. And it's out of network for my private healthcare. So we have private healthcare. We pay about $330 a month for our whole family to have really excellent healthcare.
That is nothing.
This is out of network, but we still could file it later. So I knew I was going to get reimbursed somewhat. Mm-hmm. And I went to go pay, and I got the bill, and it was, how much was it? It was like $300 or something like that. Now in the US, I would have been like, oh, nice. But I didn't even, my now European filter of this was, oh, that's really expensive. And then I had to have that, like, it was like a meta moment where I'm like, oh, you're really changing how you're thinking about this. Cause it's just such a different life with medical care.
It really
here.
Is. Oh my gosh. We could have an entire conversation just about that from when I lived in France and really got my, I really saw like the difference it makes when you're on a universal healthcare program like that and how much less they pay in the long run. Like everyone's always like, oh, they pay so much more taxes. And I'm like, yeah, but add up how much we pay just in healthcare, and what they pay in taxes makes like, it's not even close, but that's an argument I'm never going to win with anybody because we've been brainwashed here that this is the right system and it works so well for us. And yikes. But anywho, that's a whole, well, maybe we should start a health podcast. Like, oh my gosh. Well, I think it's really exciting. And one of the reasons why I love this topic, I know you are an author, but you do other things as well. You have a business to the side. A lot of our nonfiction authors are the same way. They're coaches, they're doing other things. But even for the fiction authors in our community, like when you're able to get to the point where you develop a lifestyle that allows you to spend the majority of your time writing more books, which will mean more book sales, which means more money, which means you're building a lifestyle and revenue around your writing. You can write anywhere. You can do anything. But getting to that point requires so much discipline and dedication. And I hope that's what people take from this interview, is knowing that that's the real point behind having a really system, a really, really protected, as you said, protected time frame and schedule around what you're doing so that you can achieve those goals. So would you like to say anything else about that topic for our audience? Because yes. I really want that to be the message that we take away.
Yeah, I really like the way that you pulled all that together. And then it got me thinking too about, you know, I've struggled throughout my professional career taking advice from people who seem very disconnected from the reality that I'm in. And I can acknowledge that some of these things that we're talking about, to somebody who's in that really thick and heavy period of their journey, it's like, oh, you know, like I was to that woman that I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier on, like, oh, nice, that sounds great. You know, like you really know my situation. But I do want to acknowledge that there is a period of hustle. I mean, I yes. hustled really hard. The problem is a lot of people don't recognize when it's time to stop that and step into the next phase. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that somebody listening to this at least has some awareness around, okay, I know I'm in a hustle period, I'm in a build period, but can I also still build in some things that allow me to be super productive and work really hard, but also do that more efficiently? Because it's actually really inefficient to work 90 hours a week. That's, you think you're doing more, but you're not. You're just spinning right. your wheels and you're not putting out quality. So I think there's a balance there. And I don't want to ever sound like I'm like, oh, you can just, you know, have this idyllic schedule and there's no reason to hustle. That's totally not the case. But I just think there's a different conversation that we can have. And then especially for women listening, moms listening, partners, you know, people that are in a partnered situation or doing life on their own. We have so many different things that we carry in our brains that, you know, when you said sit down on it, we were talking about resting earlier, like, oh, this idea of like sitting down and relaxing, that's not very relaxing to most of us because we have a million things going on.
Right. It's so true. Like you can't rest when all you're thinking, you're like, oh my gosh, now I'm just wasting time watching Netflix when the kitchen's a mess and there's dog hair on the floor that needs to be cleaned up and I haven't made lunches yet. I haven't done. Yes. No, for me, I think that's why I really like getting out and walking, is because, and I can't do it on a treadmill because I can get off my treadmill at any point in time and go back in the house. But yes. once I'm 3 blocks down the road, I have to at least walk those 3 blocks back, right? I can't do any of the other things. Oh yeah, great, great, great point. I think one of the most important things that you said that I'm going to take away from is I think I have been looking at it from the perspective of your client that was having a hard time making that block, and how you said to start really small, because right now I have a lot of things that I have created that I can't just walk away from, right? So even though I'm ready to start shifting and doing different things and making more of a priority on my writing, it's not like I can just cancel all the things that I have set up to create that block. But if I can start saying, Friday's the day that I don't want to have meetings, and just slowly but surely saying no every time those things happen, you know, every time something comes up, no, I can't do it on a Friday, but perhaps the next Monday, and slowly increasing that window of time that I have dedicated for my writing time. So if I just start with 30 minutes every Friday and saying I'm going to write for 30, because I think, well, I've created this system for myself, because in our membership program, we have a writing accountability session at 12:30 on every Friday for an hour. So I've given myself an hour, but I can't tell you how many times, Stacey, I wind up writing newsletters or checking email or doing all the other things. So I think first step for me is actually saying, this is the block of time that you've given. It's part of your system. Like, use it. Don't allow those other things to creep in. But that just a permission to start really small, and you don't have to be there tomorrow. Just like, just because you have an idea of a book that you've started writing doesn't mean you have to be a bestseller tomorrow, but you have to take the steps every day, little by little, to get there.
It's so good. And I love that you also brought up that weekly appointment. I was thinking about this today because this is totally unrelated to book writing, but I have two goals this year. One is to be conversationally fluent in Portuguese. The other is to be reasonably proficient at piano. And so I have weekly lessons, right? Mm-hmm. And some weeks I'm really good about practicing, and some weeks I don't practice at all, but I still have that lesson. And I think building in those accountability points. So it sounds like with your membership, that's providing that for people mm-hmm. to have that accountability, to know that they're going to show up and they're part of this group and this momentum. I think for anybody that's looking to achieve something, having something built that will maintain that accountability. And it doesn't often really work to just work with a friend. I just find that
right.
doesn't always work
right.
so well. Something, especially if you put some money on that you're, mm-hmm. you know, you have a, you're some skin in the game, you're way more likely to follow through with that and be successful.
That's how I finished my book, because I was working with just two other writers and we were scheduling these accountability sessions. Can I tell you how many times those got canceled?
Every
One,
time.
Like almost every time. I think out of like 6 months, we actually met like twice. I mean, it was that bad. And then I hired a writing coach, and I
yep.
had to meet with her. I had to provide a chapter to her every week. And I was not going to miss that one, because I hate to disappoint people, which is just a people pleasing problem. But two, because I was paying her good money. And I was like, you are not just going to pay this money just to literally set it on fire every week. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Sometimes that investment is exactly what you need to make yourself make the next step.
Yeah, 100% all the things echo. Yes.
Well, this has been so much fun. I always love talking with you, and your demeanor is so calm as well. It's just really lovely.
Oh, thanks.
That must be the Portuguese life and
it's
living
the
next
sea
to
air,
a beach.
You know?
Oh my gosh. I'm telling you what. Location makes such a big difference on mindset too. It's amazing
yeah.
how different I feel when I'm lucky to live in South Carolina. So I'm only a couple hours away from the beach. So there are times when I do try to take just like a short weekend trip or something down, give myself little writer retreats or whatever. The mindset when you are in one removed from your own environment, and two, sea air seems to just make people slow down no matter where you're at. You know, it's just calmer, it's just nice, it's beachy. It does make a big difference. So I think that's another way too. If people struggle with day-to-day time blocking, if it's possible to do like a quarterly weekend block or something like that where you can remove yourself from your environment. I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, but seems like,
I mean, that sounds great. I love that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love it. Oh, well, I appreciate you so much. Where can people, you've mentioned a couple, tell us what you do. You have a program for nonfiction authors and you have the podcast, obviously. So tell us all the things and where people can find you.
Yeah, I run a 6-month author cohort. So I guide people from idea to draft for their nonfiction book. I love that program so much. It's just so joyful and so great. I niche specifically in business, leadership, social equity, personal development, science, and wellness. So those are the areas that that I serve best in. I'm very active on Instagram. You can find me at Stacey Ennis. I'm on LinkedIn. And my website is stacyennis.com. And I have a newsletter that I send out twice a week. It's I would say a well-loved newsletter, and I have a pretty amazing newsletter community there. So, and a podcast, like I said, Beyond Better, I've been doing for several years now. And I had this amazing guest named Alexa on it not too long ago. So you can go listen to that episode as well.
Oh my gosh. I was not following you on Instagram. I am now. I don't
okay,
know how that happened.
I will follow you back after this.
It's so funny. We just assume that we're always following all our people. And it's like, oops, I wasn't. So this was so great. And I just can't appreciate, I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you taking the time to go through this and help us work through, you know, more than just productivity, but dream building. you know, and realizing that the dreams can happen with the right kind of mindset around them and the structures in place to make them happen.
Oh, I love that summary, Alexa. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed, I always enjoy getting to connect with you, but this was an especially great conversation. I really appreciate you making it happen.
Well, thank you.
You don't have to give me your heart. You don't have to give it away. You don't gotta.
Thank you for joining us on the Publisher Podcast. We hope to see you back for the next episode. Great huge thanks goes to Jasmine Commerce for the use of her song. You can find Jasmine on SoundCloud. Go check out all of her music. We'll see you next time.